You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in this great Friday, and as many of you know, it is indeed Anything Goes Friday. So we talked about a lot of stuff throughout the week. I was here on Monday and Tuesday. Many things have occurred since then, and on this particular Friday, anything goes. So if you want to participate, we'll keep those freedom lines open throughout the entire 3 hours of the program. All you need to simply do is pick up the phone, give us a call on the toll-free number, 1-866-987-8466. Again, that's 1-866-987-THOM. But also today as well, I wanted to talk about the fact that it is, in essence, it's Workers' Memorial Day, because every year on April 28th, which will happen to be Sunday, but the show will not be on Sunday, so today, April 26th, is, in all intents and purposes, Workers' Memorial Day for our show today. So we're going to have a special guest coming on at the bottom half of the hour, Anthony Arnove. I'll give you a little bit more on him in a second. But it's a very important day, my friends, because let me just preface it by saying that, you know, I come from a working family. I come from a working class background. Both my mother and father in Philadelphia were members of the union. They worked for the railroad. My father, for 43 years, he took a job age 17 and retired age 60 and was very active in the union movement, often ran for elections. Actually, I don't think my father, the captain, Eric, ever lost an election when he ran for the union.
I didn't know he was running for offices, Mike.
Well, he did. He never lost an election. So I always have a special place in my heart for the working men and the women of this country, and in particular, what unions have done for workers, not only in this country, but worldwide. So April 20th, let me just read this to you. This is from the AFL-CIO's website. It says every year on April 28th, the unions of the AFL-CIO observe Workers' Memorial Day to remember those who have suffered and died on the job and to renew our efforts for safe workplaces. This year, the struggle continues to create good jobs in this country that are safe and healthy and to ensure the freedom of workers to form unions and through their unions to speak out and bargain for respect and a better future. It's time for our country to fulfill the promise of safe jobs for all. 4 decades ago, Congress passed the Occupational Safety and Health Act, which we all know is OSHA, O-S-H-A, promising every worker the right to a safe job. Unions and our allies have fought hard to make that promise a reality, winning protections that have made jobs safer, saved hundreds of thousands of lives, and prevented millions of workplace injuries and illnesses. But obviously the work is not done. And what we've seen, Eric, just in the last week alone, or last several weeks, we saw in Texas that plant go up in an incredible explosion. It was 10 feet deep, 100 feet wide.
Took out houses, businesses, everything.
I mean, you know, scores of people injured, over 100 people have perished and died in that particular explosion. That plant, as we know, did not have any serious regulations or inspections as far back as 1985. And then, I don't know if you've heard recently, you probably have in the news, in Bangladesh, they had this huge factory just collapse on itself. And now there's well over 100 dead, and that will get you more of the statistics. There was about several thousand workers who were working in that factory. Scores are now trapped underneath the rubble and the mangled steel. Two women were trapped under there who were pregnant at the time and gave birth to babies trapped beneath the rubble. They rescued the babies and then subsequently those women. But time is running out. It's now close to 72 hours since that building collapsed in Bangladesh, and people remain trapped, entombed, if you will, alive underneath all of that rubble, that concrete, that steel. And it's just sad to see that, you know, I know we had the Boston Marathon bombing, and again, not to marginalize that in any way, but there were three people who were killed in that, others who lost their limbs, others who were, you know, severely injured. But here we have in the workplace, which you would think, Eric, that the workplace should be a pretty safe place. If you shouldn't feel that if you're going to work,
you're going to die.
Right, that you're going to die.
You shouldn't be in fear of your life every time you step through the door at work.
Exactly. You're looking to get a paycheck. You're looking to support your family. You know, you're looking to maybe meet some of your colleagues at work, and you know,
not leave them fatherless.
No, absolutely.
Hey, so, by the way, they said they found 304 bodies in Bangladesh so far.
So far, so it's over 300 now. So 300 people who have perished in that horrible, horrible accident. And this is what Workers' Memorial Day is all about. It's to really reach out to the public at large,
Do they have OSHA in Bangladesh?
Well, I don't think they have OSHA, but see, that's the problem.
Similar?
It's completely deregulated
there.
And many of the national and transnational companies receive their products, because the garment industry, this was a garment factory, or at least part of it was, and it's a, you know,
right.
The,
we get our stuff from them because it's cheaper, because they don't have those regulations.
Right. There's no regulations there. The average worker there in Bangladesh at that particular factory, they make about $38 a month.
And what's the average age?
Well, I'm sure there's lots of children working and whatnot. But you figure you got, you know, hardly any regulations. You got decrepit conditions. You got very unsafe places. You have no unions, and you have people making $38 an hour, but yet you have these international companies that are brand name companies. You got Walmart, who was contracted with one of these facilities to receive goods. You have people like The Gap, Banana Republic. I mean, you name it, Eric. These are multi-billion-dollar companies.
And they're saving a buck. And
right.
You know what? If they brought all those jobs back to this country,
right,
it would be a very profitable country.
No, well, and that's the other thing, too, is that there's this outsourcing of these jobs.
I hate that.
But it's also the fundamental disrespect for the worker. I mean, look, you know, my dad always said there's nothing more valuable that a man or a woman can give than his or her time and labor. And I believe that. I believe that no matter what job you perform, it doesn't matter to me. No matter what the job is, that's giving basically all you got is your time and your hands and your sweat and your labor. And that should be valued in our society. It should be valued in every society, quite frankly. But the problem is that when you look at more and more the global corporatization of finance, of business, and where the bottom line is only the dollar, that profit is the only thing that is ultimately the thing that matters the most, then that's a problem. That's a problem for us as a species. It's a problem for us as a human race, because when we start to value material things, when we start to value monetary policies more than we do the human being, than the human soul, then that really is, as Martin Luther King Jr. once said, you know, approach a nation approaching spiritual death. That when you value, you know, more militarization and rather than looking at social uplift, then that is a nation that is approaching spiritual death. So that's something that I definitely want to put on the table today for the listeners, because it is, in essence, Workers Memorial Day. It'll be Sunday, April 28th, but since this is a Friday show and it's April 26th, I want to make sure that I put that on the table so that if you have any questions about that, if you want to call us up and discuss, you know, what it means to have a job, what it means to be a worker, what it means to give your blood, sweat, and tears to a company or a corporation, and what do you expect in return from that type of a relationship, because as far as I'm concerned, that should be a reciprocal relationship where both parties feel as though they're benefiting, okay? And then as long as you have that kind of relationship where one side can talk to the other side and say, look, I'm going to give you this, and in return, you give me that, and you both sign off, and you both agree, that's a good thing. But when one side is disproportionately benefiting versus the other side, and then the other side has to worry, like we said, Eric, that if you walk into the building where you're supposed to perform that job and that you might get your head chopped off or you might get your hand chopped off or the building collapses on you.
Check it out, dude. This was a three-story building that the owner added three more floors to.
Right.
And then was building another one.
Yeah, I think there was it went up to eight stories high.
Yeah,
it was only
designed to hold the three stories,
right,
and he added all these other stories to it. And that's because they don't have the regulations.
No, and this is the point, is that you need regulations. I've always been a strong proponent of good, fair, practical regulations. But the bottom line is you have these trans-global companies that don't want to put the time or the effort or pay even a little extra. I mean, for Christ's sakes, you're spending $38 a month on your worker. You can't pay a little bit more money out of your billion-dollar revenue stream to create a safe working environment so that these people are not mangled beneath rubble and steel and pregnant women trapped beneath and having to deliver their baby in such a situation. That's just absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. Any case, we'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike sitting in for today. It's Anything Goes Friday, so let's get to the Freedom Lines. First up is Gary from Albuquerque, New Mexico, calling on Free Speech TV. Gary, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Doctor.
Good afternoon.
Regarding the West Fertilizer plant explosion, about 40 years ago, I had read an article where if you combine ammonium nitrate with anhydrous ammonia, you get a much more exotic explosion than you would with either one of them separately. I worked in a gold mine in the 70s in the Black Hills. Mm-hmm. We did use ANFO, which is ammonium nitrate fuel oil, but I'd read that if you combine those other two, ammonia, anhydrous ammonia, mm-hmm. and ammonium nitrate, you get a far more dangerous explosion.
Well, look, and this is why I wanted to kind of feature this story today, because quite frankly, you know, I know we had spoken a lot, and appropriately so, about the Boston Marathon bombing, and it was devastating, but this explosion of this plant in West Texas really, I don't think, got quite the same press. And if you look at it, because they were both explosions, right? They, you know, in Boston, you had two bombs that were homemade bombs and pressure cookers. But here you had an actual plant that people knew existed and that since 1985, nearly three decades ago, had really no major inspections, and it was on the radar. We knew that something like this, if not managed appropriately and looked after, could have catastrophic consequences if something were to go amok, and we saw what happened there. So the question is, how does this happen? I mean, how in a country such as this, Gary, can we allow a plant that has explosive chemicals or potentially explosive chemicals to go unregulated? I mean, don't you think we need more regulation in this country for instances like this?
Well, I believe since we had the Patriot Act back in 2001 that it was supposed to be checking out things like this.
Right, exactly. And I am still not convinced to this moment that there could have been something else that triggered this event. The authorities still don't know, Gary. They still don't know what caused this explosion. What they have said, they ruled out that it was not an accidental thing. In other words, it wasn't like some fire or some flame or something triggered it. They don't think it was that. So if it wasn't that, then it begs the question, what was it? Was this purposeful? Did somebody set this explosion up? Was this a terrorist attack? Or was it just basically a plant that wasn't expected for quite some time, and it literally was a time bomb waiting to go off? Listen, Gary, I appreciate your call. Thanks a lot.
Okay, plus, they were holding more chemicals than they were supposed to.
Right, exactly. Look, and a lot of the analysis, if you look at it since this occurred, is indicating that OSHA, which we talked about at the outset, the Occupational Safety Health Administration, that OSHA has been underfunded, too, because of the government defunding, tight budgets, sequestration, et cetera. Historically, if the federal government was commissioned to go out there and look at these things, because conservatives don't like things to be regulated or looked at.
They like things to go boom.
Right, things that make you go boom. So they, in essence, starve the beast. And in this case, they think the beast is the regulator.
Right.
And so if they could defund these programs and these institutions as much as possible, they feel they have no teeth, and therefore they can't go out there. Just like in this case in the West Texas plant, they can't go out there for three decades. And ultimately, like I said, it is a time bomb waiting to happen. Something horrible is eventually going to happen if you're not overseeing this. Let's go to my hometown of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We got Frank on the line. He's listening via Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Frank, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
Good. I was just calling you to elaborate on what you're saying about the defunding. The way OSHA works today is if you're an employee and you have a complaint, you call OSHA up. They then notify your employer by mail and ask them, and we have an anonymous complaint or tip that you're performing or you're causing violations of under whatever part of the act it is. Could you please reply within the next 5 days?
Right.
Now, if you say, oh, of course, okay, I'm committing an act against OSHA, you'll be fine. It's just like me saying, getting a notification from the state police saying, did you go 100 miles an hour down 95 today? Now, am I going to admit to that or not? So what they do is they get the complaint back, and then they close the file. They've defunded it so badly, they have no – I shouldn't say no field investigators. They used to only go out about 5 years ago if it was an imminent death threat on a job site. They don't even go out now on imminent death threats, okay? Imminent danger now is a direct phone call to the employer. Are you causing this?
Wow.
So there is not, I mean, this is a joke anymore in this country. There is no rights for employees. You can have Memorial Day for employees' rights. You have people running the AFL-CIO that's never really worked. Rich Trunka, okay, he claims he's a miner, never worked in the mines, right? They don't, we've become, the labor movement today, okay, organized labor has become what we hated. Mm-hmm. Okay, a bunch of rich bureaucrats that have no common sense of what they represent. And it's really a sad state of affairs. What is that thing called the Employees Free Choice Act that Obama was going to spearhead?
Right.
That's got thrown under the bus. Right?
Well, look, I don't necessarily disagree in the sense, Frank, that I think the labor movement is a mere shadow, obviously, what it used to be. I mean, if you look at years ago, decades ago, you had 40-50%, maybe even north of that, of the workplace who were involved with unions. Today, it's in single digits. I mean, so every step along the way, you know, they've taken the fangs out of the labor movement. And like you said, in certain instances, there are people even within the labor movement who have become just sort of crony capitalists themselves, and they've coddled up with the, you know, the powers that be, and get very handsome salaries and benefits, and don't necessarily represent the workers as they should. And I've witnessed that within my own home, to be quite frank with you. So look, the only way that this is going to happen, Frank, is that people like yourself need to call up. You're speaking on the national stage today. Tom has millions of listeners. People need to hear what has to be said, and people need to participate. Tom always says democracy is a participatory sport, and we have to participate. So listen, Frank, I appreciate you calling up from the city of brotherly love, and best to you, okay? All right, there you have it. It's Frank calling from Philly. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Broadcasting from 1480 KPHX in the desert here in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in right now. We do have a special guest on the line. We'll get to the Freedom Lines in a second. But we have Anthony Arnov, Dr. Anthony Arnov, on the program right now. He is editor of Howard Zinn Speaks, and with Zinn, Voices of a People's History of the United States, a phenomenal book if you've never read it, if you want to get a real close up front and personal look of what really happened with respect to the United States and our great heritage, then I would suggest you check that book out. Also, he is co-executive producer and co-director with Howard Zinn, Chris Moore, John Brolin, and Matt Damon of the film The People Speak, and also his writing has appeared in Mother Jones, O Magazine, The Financial Times, and The Nation, and many other publications. So without further ado, let's welcome to the table Anthony Arnov. How are you, Anthony?
Good, Mike. Good to be back on the program.
Yeah, it's great to have you here, Anthony. Well, listen, during the first half hour of the program, we were talking about Workers' Memorial Day, which the AFL-CIO here celebrates this Sunday, and then you have International Workers' Day, I believe, which is May 1st, if I'm not mistaken. And we're talking to Anthony about what some of the recent occurrences that we've seen, not only nationally but internationally. We saw the West Texas, the West Chemical and Fertilizer Company plant just blow up and have a horrible explosion, countless number of deaths, and then also the recent, this week, the Bangladesh factory collapsing, and right now over 300 people dead, many others entombed alive beneath that mangled steel and concrete. So I guess the first question I would ask you today, Anthony, is Howard Zinn, who was a foremost advocate for workers' rights and liberties and freedoms, what would Howard have to say with all this going on?
Well, I think Howard would say that these are not just tragedies incidents that have destroyed the lives of hundreds of people and destroyed communities and torn apart families, but they were preventable tragedies. And that, in fact, they were easily preventable tragedies, but ultimately people in positions of power chose greed and chose profit over the safety of their workers. And that is something that we see repeated over and over in the history of this country, and unfortunately see repeated over and over in the history of other countries. And that until we defend the basic rights of workers to organize, create unions, create safe working conditions where they have control over their working conditions, we're going to continue to see incidents like this take place. Completely preventable tragedies where short-term thinking, profit, and greed lead to what is really murder. I think there's no other way to describe these incidents than murder. They're not accidents.
Right.
They're creating situations where it is inevitable that lives will be lost. I mean, particularly in the case of Bangladesh, where the workers said, this is an unsafe workplace. We do not want to go in. And they were threatened with having a whole month's wages taken away from them, which
right.
in the conditions in Bangladesh, where they're paid so little as $38 or so a month.
Right.
People's entire livelihoods depend on those jobs. They had no choice but, in effect, walk into a death trap. They were given a choice that was, you know, unconscionable. And had there been stronger workplace safety, had there been stronger unions, had there been more labor rights, which is not just a question for the Bangladeshi government, but is a question for the U.S. retailers having their cheap goods made in those factories, U.S. retailers who are reluctant to impose any kind of labor standards on those factories. Those are, unfortunately, things we're going to continue to see happening unless we fight for stronger worker rights.
No doubt about it. Anthony, let me talk about OSHA for this particular moment, because doing the research and looking at OSHA and looking at the funding and the budgets and how things have been defunded and they're working on a shoestring budget in many states, the study that I looked at, they said that given that backdrop, that a workplace only would get a visit from OSHA in this West Texas explosion on average every 99 years. With some of these states, and then in Texas, that a plant could actually expect an inspection every 126 years. How does that happen? How does that happen in America, where a workplace is going to get inspected on average every century?
Well, it's part of a concerted and long-standing effort to bust unions in this country, to eliminate any kind of regulations around workplace safety or environmental outputs and safety, and to move towards an environment of complete deregulation. Now, not coincidentally, we're having this conversation against the backdrop of several years of economic crisis created also by that move towards greater and greater deregulation, which allowed the banking crisis to take place.
Correct.
Which allowed people to be sold completely fraudulent home mortgages. We can go to a whole other series of ways in which deregulation has led to the destabilization of this economy and communities around the country. But it's been a concerted effort, decade-long concerted effort, to eliminate any regulatory authority of OSHA, to cut back that budget, to limit workplace inspections, and to bust unions. And the result is going to be more explosions like the one we just saw in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, it's a horrible, horrible tragedy. Let me ask you this, Anthony. Given the changing sort of demographics of this country, because you talked about the deregulation, and obviously that I feel has been a major, major goal of the conservative movement in this country, is to deregulate, to put corporations and businesses in charge and marginalize the worker and the individual. But given the fact now that we see the demographics in this country changing, you've seen election cycles now where some more progressive candidates, liberal candidates, are starting to win elections. They say within the next, 10, 20 years, that we'll have more of a minority population when you aggregate everything together versus, you know, a quote-unquote white population. And not that it's white against minority, but what I'm just saying is that, do you see any hope or promise in those changing demographics that we'll begin to see more protection of workers, we'll begin to see more elections that elect union candidates and candidates who are pro-worker, pro-family? Do you see that changing, or have we passed the point of no return?
No, I don't think we've passed the point of no return, but we are in a dire situation. I mean, the extent to which workers are represented by unions is at the lowest it's been in decades.
What percent is that now, Anthony? I mean, it's
now under 10%.
Right, that's what I thought, single digits.
And it's been rolled back also in the public sector, particularly, unfortunately, through bipartisan attacks on government unions. In fact, some of the bigger cuts have actually happened under Democratic administrations, which is a longer conversation to have. But I'm optimistic that some of the demographic changes you're talking about do create the opportunity, the possibility for a revival of the U.S. labor movement. There's an energy in immigrant communities. There's also, in some cases, organizing traditions. People are coming from Latin America
right.
with experience of organizing, in some cases organizing under very difficult conditions to fight for basic labor rights. And there's an energy, for example, in the labor movements of Nevada and California, where you see some of the Latino organizers making very important connections between the unemployed, between the underemployed, and people who have the benefit of jobs, and doing some very innovative organizing. So there's a promise there, but to my mind, it's going to take a real shift in the philosophical approach of the major unions, including the AFL-CIO,
right.
which unfortunately are spending far more money on candidates than they are on organizing.
Right.
Or especially on organizing the unorganized. And that's why I'm also encouraged by a lot of the initiatives that you see around fast food workers, where they're really taking the lead. In some cases, these are workers who are not organized. I mean, in most cases, they're not organized in any kind of union. But they're taking the kinds of actions and showing leadership that I think should give a jolt to the entire labor movement.
Right. So basically what you're saying, given the waning numbers of people who are actually enrolled and participating in unions right now, that perhaps the labor movement shouldn't be focusing on just election cycles and sort of their preferred candidate of the day, a du jour, if you will, but really getting out there and doing the hard work, which is really,
exactly.
you know, boots on the ground, pressing the flesh, you know, one by one, you know, get two, get 10, get 30, get 100. And that is something that takes a lot more time and energy. Do you see the American labor movement adopting that strategy?
I think it's that, or we honestly are talking about the collapse of organized labor as we know it in this country. I think it's a do or die situation. And I'm encouraged by the examples where we do see people doing that kind of organizing, using that model. For example, Chicago,
right.
where the Chicago Teachers Union just waged a historic victory where the parents in the community, the students in that community, the teachers came together and pushed back against Rahm Emanuel, a very powerful mayor with very strong business ties in that community, and defeated an agenda that would have been a disaster for the Chicago public schools. Now they have another fight on their hands because Emanuel wants to close 54 schools, and those are particularly concentrated in majority minority communities, African American communities.
Right, right, no doubt about it. Well, listen, Anthony, we got to run, so I appreciate
that fight.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, listen, Anthony, thank you for all your time and energy and the great work you do on behalf of working men and women in this country. Thanks for appearing on the program today.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay. Okay, we'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman program. It is Anything Goes Friday, so stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Broadcasting from the desert in Phoenix, Arizona, 1480 KPHX, you're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today, and a special thanks to Dr. Anthony Arnov for his insight and perspective on what's happening with respect to the labor movement here, not only in this country, but internationally. And I agree wholeheartedly that we need to get back to the old boots on the ground, pressing the flesh and organizing one community at a time, one district at a time, one city at a time, one state at a time, and then, you know, one country. And that's really the hard work that needs to be put in. But listen, a lot of people have been holding right now, so I'm just going to go in no respect. Well, actually, I'll go in the order of perhaps when you guys called in. So the first guy calling is Detroit Johnny from Romulus, Michigan, and he has a question for the listening audience. So welcome to the table, Detroit Johnny.
Hi, Mike.
Yes, sir.
Oh, wonderful job, man.
Thank you.
I mean, if it wasn't for you and Bernie and Tom, what would we do? Well, I had a question for – I thought Bernie was going to be on with you today, Bernie, Senator Sanders.
No, he's not on today.
Yeah, well.
But what would your question have been anyway?
Yeah, well, I was wondering, is there a way to either impeach or deport someone like John Boehner?
Well, I don't know about deport him. That's a whole different issue. But I think what you're talking about is to sort of bring him up and then probably try to get him out of the leadership position that he's in currently. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's hooked up with Fannie Mae, so I figured we could deport him. He's probably got money in short bank accounts.
Just yeah.
Like Romney and Kid Rock and anybody who supported Romney, they should be deported. Philip Knight, he's another one.
The guy from Nike.
He tortures his employees in Vietnam for 35 cents an hour, and he wants to live in this country but not pay taxes.
Right. No, I agree it's wrong. Well, listen, Detroit Johnny, we got a lot of people in the queue. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Okay, that's Detroit Johnny calling up, talking about deporting John Boehner, Eric. I mean, that's a pretty serious initiative there.
Yeah.
I mean, we can agree to disagree, but you just can't go out and render them and deport them.
Although, no, but you can take his tanning bed away.
Yes, and then I think that would definitely put him in jeopardy of losing the next election. If he wasn't that bronze, do you think that would be a turnoff to the voters? Would they see it as a sign of weakness?
Pasty white weakness.
Right. It wouldn't bode well for his reelection chances. All right, let's get back to the Freedom Lines at 1-866-987-8466. Next up in the queue, let's go to Tom. Tom's on the line in Stuart, Florida, listening on Free Speech. Tom, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Mike Newcomb, how are you today? Dr. Mike.
Every day's a blessing, Tom. Every day's a blessing.
Man, I want to applaud you for your faith in the adults out there running this country and the people that vote for them.
Yeah, well, I don't have so much faith in the people running the country. I have more faith in the people not running the country right now. It's the people who are not running it who need to get involved and get out there, get organized, and participate in our democracy. And I think if they do that, Tom, I think the sky's the limit. We will see more freedom, more liberty, more workers' rights, more nuclear mm-hmm. families. But we just got to get organized. And guess what, Tom? Today, with all the different tools that we have available, it's a hell of a lot easier to get organized today than it was decades ago. I mean, you could hook up instantly now with people via email and the internet and Twitter and Facebook and social media and video cameras and cell phones. I mean, the ability for people to organize right now is at a point where we've never seen it in the history of mankind. So what's that?
The mail is the best part.
Right, the mail. But so, look, hopefully people will take up that mantle and utilize that technology and get energized and focused. And if they do, you know, hell hath no fury, not only like a woman scorned, but an organized labor workforce. So we'll see what happens. But, hey, so what did you had a question about Texas or secession? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, actually, yeah, I got kind of swayed off, so I'll keep it simple. I've seen petitions go around by way of mail, like anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Just to educate people, let them send it to 10 more people, whatever they choose. And I think a lot of people, like you say, internet, there's a lot of media out there, but I think a lot of people are a little reluctant to go that far, you know, for obvious reasons. But what I was calling about was originally was the Texas issue. They're apparently trying to succeed from the nation.
Well, there's lots of those kind of initiatives going on. We in our own backyard here in Arizona, they threatened to do that. They threatened to secede from the union. I mean, this is just the work of a bunch of lunatic far-right conservative people who, quite frankly, are not really patriots. They despise the Constitution. They despise the Founding Fathers. They are enemies and adversaries of liberty and freedom, and that's why they want to secede, because they are not really people on board with the American dream and what our founding fathers had envisioned. And that's why you have the liberal progressive movement now in this country, who are the defenders of the Constitution, defenders of liberty, defenders of freedom. It's always been that way, and it'll remain that way. And, you know, we just got to keep fighting the fight. So listen, I'm going to let you go now, Tom. I want to get to the other callers. I want to be fair about this. 1-866-987-8466 is the Freedom Line. 1-866-987-THOM. It's Anything Goes Friday, so anybody can pick up the phone, give us a call, and speak about any topic that you'd like to speak about. So let's go next to Lorenzo. He's calling from El Paso, Texas, on Free Speech. And Lorenzo, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello there, Mike. Hi, Dr. Mike. How are you doing?
How are you doing, Lorenzo?
Pretty good, pretty good. I've been listening to your show just maybe about half an hour ago. I like to see Tom Hartman and, you know, the free speech whenever I get a chance. And I got real interested right now that you're talking about this issue about Texas, that explosion.
Right.
Because I used to work at a Phelps Dodge copper refinery here in El Paso, Texas, now by the name of Freeport McMoRan. And what I know about OSHA is because I was a whistleblower we were taking a whole bunch of contaminated closed home, and some of that stuff got fixed a little bit. But anyways, the OSHA, the way these people work is the VPP program. OSHA has a VPP program called, it's a voluntary protection program or something like that.
Right.
And they basically are regulated by themselves, these companies, when they join this. And, you know, like Rick Perry and
right.
a bunch of these people, they get these contributions.
All right, look, I'm going to have to put you on hold right now. I appreciate that, but we're up against the hard break. We'll be back at the top of the hour with more of the Tom Hartman program. Stay with us, my friends.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom today, and we have a very special guest at the top of the hour on the line as we speak, Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. He is world-renowned for his work with infectious diseases, and I remember when I was a student back in the day at NYU, 1982, and I'll talk about that in a little second with respect to the HIV epidemic. But let's welcome Dr. Fauci to the table. Welcome, Dr. Fauci.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you here today. Well, listen, we want to talk today in particular about this new bird flu that's occurring in China right now. It seems to be somewhat localized, but yet there's great consternation and fear that this thing could blow up and perhaps become a pandemic. So what can you tell our listeners right now, Dr. Fauci, with respect to this particular bird flu, this virus, and what's happening on the ground level?
Sure. Well, I think the important thing to point out is that this is a bird flu that is infecting birds, predominantly chickens, in China. And it, on certain circumstances, there have been, you know, over 110, between 110 and 120 cases thus far, where it jumps from the chicken to the human and is pretty serious disease in the human. What it has not done, and that's the thing we want to clarify for the listeners, it doesn't spread from human to human. But when you have infections that get into human, there's always the threat that the virus could mutate and acquire the capability of spreading from human to human. Right now, they're dead-end cases, and the difficulty is people get exposed to infected chickens. They get sick, and they get very sick. But whenever you see that, you always have to be on the alert that influenza viruses, which have the uncanny ability to mutate and adapt themselves to situations, that they don't do it in a way that people start getting infected one from the other. Luckily, that has not happened. But the things that you're hearing about in the radio, newspapers, TV, is the preparation to make sure that we are prepared if, in fact, that does happen, which we hope it won't, and it likely will not, but you have to be prepared.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Dr. Fauci, right now you said there was about 120 cases. Of those cases, though, quite a few, if I'm not mistaken, have actually perished, though, too, right? What percent of those 120?
Well, it's about a 20% mortality. Some of the listeners might remember that the original bird flu that has been percolating now for a long time, the H5N1,
right,
that we've been counting and following carefully since, well, it started in 1997, but in earnest in 2003. There have been about 600 plus cases of that, with about, you know, more than half, 50 to 60% mortality. Again, that virus, similar to this bird flu, does not spread from human to human. The right. thing that's a little bit concerning about this is that over a period of just a few months, because this was just recognized a couple of months ago, there have already been about 120 cases with about a 20% mortality.
Right.
Again, not spreading from human to human, but when you get it from the chicken in China, it's a pretty serious disease.
Right, it's a pretty serious disease. Tell our listeners, Dr. Fauci, I know we often hear a lot of these H this and that, and as physicians, we both know that, you know, what that means, the hemagglutinin and the neuraminidase. But tell the listeners, sort of in layman's terms, Dr. Fauci, what specifically that sort of nomenclature, that designation means with respect to the hemagglutinin and the neuraminidase protein molecules.
Okay, so when you hear about flu and you read about it in the newspaper, the common seasonal flu that just happens every year, you have a designation that's an H and an N. So, for example, the more common one that we get infected with here in the United States and elsewhere is an H3N2. And that just is a difference of a protein. There are two major proteins on an influenza virus, and as you mentioned correctly, one is called the hemagglutinin, the other one is called the neuraminidase. A few years ago when we had the 2009 H1N1 pandemic, that was just a little bit of a different kind of a flu. Same influenza A, same thing, but a difference in the nature of the protein that's expressed on the surface. Almost all, in fact, if you look in recorded history, the flus that have infected humans, the influenza A's, have either been an H1, an H2, or an H3. A few years ago was H1N1. Last year was mostly H3N2. That's just the designation. There are many different H's and N's. In fact, there's about 16 H's and about 10 N's. Most of these are diseases and infections among animals. Fowl, chicken often are the source. Waterfowl are the source. Sometimes they jump species into humans. When they adapt themselves to humans, they can spread from human to human. When you have this type of a situation that we're dealing with now, it has unfortunately jumped from a chicken, which is the real host, into the unfortunate human that happened to have been there and gotten infected from the chicken. But fortunately, it hasn't adapted itself such to the human where it spreads from human to human. But
right.
Since there's always that possibility, that's why you have the kind of preparedness we're talking about now and why our Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are taking this very seriously and already starting to do the early stages of a vaccine in case we might need a vaccine.
Now, let's, for our listeners' perspective, so you got the hemagglutinin and the neuraminidase and their protein molecules, and they function to infect the human by getting to the cell, right, Dr. Fauci?
Exactly.
And it's like a lock and key kind of mechanism,
right.
Correct?
Right.
Right. So then once the virus attaches to the human cell, then it has to penetrate the cell and then get inside. And walk our listeners just sort of at a very layman's level once it's inside the cell, because then it can overtake the genetic machinery.
Right. Well, what happens, there are receptors in different parts of the respiratory tree that allows one to get infected or not with an influenza. So if there's, let's say, a typical influenza that's a seasonal one that we're all exposed to, it gets into your nasal pharynx, your nose, your mouth, or whatever, either by someone coughing on you or you're shaking hands with someone who just blew their nose and they're sick with it. The virus that's there, by virtue of this hemagglutinin molecule, this HA that we talk about, binds to cells in the respiratory tract, mostly in the upper airway, and then it starts to infect the cell, it enters the cell, and then it starts making a lot of other viruses, which then spread to other respiratory cells.
Right.
It can then disseminate. Most of the time, it's handled, and you get an illness, which is a fever, you get aches, and you get all the kinds of things that you get infection with. Sometimes when it goes down into the lung and infects some of the cells of the lower respiratory tract, that's when you get some of the serious pneumonias, which in a seasonal flu is relatively rare in otherwise healthy individuals.
Right.
People that are most vulnerable to getting serious infection from influenza are very young children, the elderly, and people who have debilitating diseases. They're on different types of drugs that suppress their immune system. And interestingly enough, pregnant women are particularly susceptible to some of the deleterious effects, making it more than just something that'll put you in bed for a day or two and then you're okay.
Right, right. No doubt about it. I mean, I often tell people, I know there's this war on terrorism, but as fellow physicians, I mean, there's terrorists at the micromolecular level, which are all these bugs, Dr. Fauci, and they're no dummies, right? They know how to kind of rearrange your genetic code and avoid us. Talk about, you were mentioning the vaccine, Dr. Fauci. What's the lag time there? So say you've got the actual virus now. How long, just very quickly, about 30 seconds, does it take to make a vaccine?
Well, to make enough vaccine to be able to be distributed, namely throughout the country or throughout wherever the region is, generally takes about 6 months from the time that you identify the virus and sequence it to the time you have enough vaccine to distribute. To actually make a seed virus, to do pilot lots so that you can start testing them, that takes a couple of months. So right now, the CDC already has a seed virus, and we're going to start looking at trying to test that when we make
possible vaccines. All right, well, listen, Dr. Fauci, as always, an honor to speak with you today, and keep up the great work in protecting mankind from the terrorists that we can't see.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Thank you. Okay, we'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman program in a moment. Stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Broadcasting from the desert here in Phoenix, Arizona, 1480 KPHX. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Okay, welcome back to the program. It is the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in, and Eric and I just had the great opportunity to wolf down some food during that break. I know, we were starving. We order online from some local
Grubhub.
Is that what it is? Yeah. And they send you the lunch here. And during the top of the hour break, which is a little longer, we thought the food would be here, and it wasn't. And
it took a long time today.
And you were ready to, like, pass out, right?
Yes.
You're like, you're starving. So we both went outside, and I guess thought that if we went outside and looked somehow or another, it'd get here faster, but that didn't happen. But so I had the chicken dumpling soup.
I did too. It was very good.
Did you have the dumpling soup as well?
I did.
Yeah, I thought it was very good. It's probably a lot of calories in that one.
Yeah, it's a creamy broth with a lot of dough in it.
Yes, I know. But it was very good, though. All right, well, listen, let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now. 1-866-987-8466. That's THOM. 1-866-987-8466. And let's go first to Patty online from Portland, Oregon. Patty, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Dr. Mike. Your guest earlier that he was optimistic that that we may beat this economic disaster that we're facing.
Yes, Anthony Arnold.
I'm not so
confident,
optimistic about it. Right now, we're living in a plutocracy, and I think
right.
A lot of people don't realize that. The rich are running our government, and there are very few legislators that are not corrupted by money.
Right, right. Well, what do you think about the concept that we were talking about, empowering the individual and using the technologies that we have now, cell phones and social media, internet? I mean, don't you think if ever there was a time for people to unite, Patty, that this would be it? We have the tools now to reach out to our fellow brothers and sisters, unlike we've ever been able to in the past.
Absolutely. I'm pretty much housebound. I'm disabled. And I am extremely active on the internet.
Right.
And it is a wonderful tool for people. The only
right.
problem is the few people that bother to go out to vote think that once they vote, their civic duty is over. And people need to realize that they have a duty to this country to work hard to get what we need. And rather than sitting around bitching about, complaining about, what are our senators and what's going on and low wages and austerity, even though that's been debunked, the Democrats aren't going to do anything about it. There's still going to be cuts. We're still going to be hurting.
Yeah, but
they're going to look at it. They're not going to bother looking at it. And if people don't gather, if we don't fight this,
right,
then we're going to lose, and we need people power to do this.
Well, listen, Patty, you are the one of those people, and we thank you for participating. You called and spoke to millions of people today. They heard your voice, and guess what? That's how it starts, with one person reaching out to many. So thanks a lot, Patty, for calling in.
Thank you, Dr. Mike.
Okay, so there you have Patty, disabled, homebound, uses the internet, listening online.
But gets the job done.
Right, and that's what you got to do. You got to have that belief that, you know, your voice can make a difference. Actually, I got a nice little quote today from our executive producer, Sean, and she had sent this on what we call the one sheet. So let me just read you this, because this is germane to what we're talking about right now. This is a quote from Howard Zinn, and as many of you know, he just passed away recently in 2010. Phenomenal man, phenomenal, phenomenal man. And like I said, if you've never read A People's History of the United States, it is a phenomenal history book. You got to check it out. It tells the true story of America and a lot of the egregious things that were done at the hands of our own government to many different types of groups, whether it was the Native Americans, whether it was slavery, whether it was the Vietnam War. I mean, you name it. Howard Zinn, his lens, his perspective on things is actually spot on. But Howard Zinn said this. He said, quote, "We don't have to engage in grand, heroic actions to participate in the process of change. Small acts, when multiplied by millions of people, can transform the world." So that's something that Howard Zinn said, and I think that was really what I was trying to say to Patty, although Howard Zinn said it a lot more eloquently than I did. So in any case, let's get back to the Freedom Lines, my friends, and let's go next to, let's see, Emmanuel, who is listening in Chicago, Illinois. I don't think it's Rahm Emanuel, but who knows, Eric? It very well might be on WCPT. So Emmanuel, welcome to the table.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, good, Emmanuel. What's on your mind today?
To Patty's point, I want to get straight to the point. I called Tom a while back, and I talked about intelligence versus intellectual. And
yes.
Straight to the point, many intellectuals understand the facts perfectly. And because they understand the facts so well, when they try to explain it to others, they get frustrated. Frustration. I think about Mike Papantonio. I was listening to him yesterday.
Uh-huh.
His frustration just spills out until he starts name calling and stuff. Then he becomes part of the problem.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Instead of becoming part of the problem, you think about the human aspects of it. I'll give you an example of what I'm saying. We know that the president is messing with Social Security. No good. Everybody dislikes that. Nobody wants that. Okay, but if you step back from it, instead of bashing the president and becoming part of the problem, I say part of the problem because corporations well understand.
Right.
That divided house falls.
No, absolutely. Listen, Emmanuel, we got to run. I hear what you're saying. A divided house does fall. Let's speak directly to the issues. Let's not name call. We could disagree without being disagreeable, which is, I think, what Emmanuel was saying there, straight to the point. So we'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and it's Anything Goes Friday, so give us a call. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, Anything Goes Friday. The Freedom Lines are open, 1-866-987-8466. That's 1-866-987-THOM. Okay, let's go next to Andrew. He's been holding for some time in Redlands, California on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Mike. Yeah, well, I heard you in the first of the week talk about the medical and the one-payer medical system. Well, there's a project working to enact the Howard Hughes barcode medical card,
uh-huh,
and totally cover the total cost of medical from recycling from the barcode from packaging.
Okay.
And yeah, it's and now hearing you talk about the union problems and everything, harnessingthegrit.com also covers that.
As far as what, you trying know, to get people more involved in the union movement?
Oh yeah, we're getting ready to send off to Mr. Donahoe, the Postmaster General, about putting the whole postal employees into the electric project and change everything from fuel cars to electric cars and put solar charged carports up at the post offices. And
yeah, that would be awesome. Electric. That would be phenomenal if they could do that. You know what that could do? That could be a catalyst, if you will, Andrew, for solar and clean fuel and electrical cars on a go-forward basis, because somebody's got to do it on a large national scale. And if they can do it via the postal workers, like you're saying, that would be phenomenal, because that would just maybe jumpstart that whole industry that seems to be kind of lagging a little behind right now.
Just the post office itself, the 530 postal workers and the 26,000 post offices going into this project creates 1.5 to 2 million jobs in every state.
Right.
Just to manufacture the solar to set out underneath the 800,000 miles of power lines we have in the United States, you know, right yeah. underneath of them and pump right into those lines.
Absolutely.
You know, and put carport chargers everywhere, electric car chargers everywhere, and the problem is solved. The jobs are created, the environment's saved, and, you know, it goes on and on. Anyway, you know, it's all there on harnessingthegrit.com.
All right, we will check it out, Andrew. Thank you very much for that information. Very powerful
you
stuff.
You have it.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Bye-bye now. All right, that's Andrew from Sirius, or listening in Sirius. XM, and he's from Redlands, California. Okay, that opens up another Freedom Line. Let's keep moving on because it is Anything Goes Friday. So let's go next to Brad. Brad is in Wichita Falls, Texas, also listening on Sirius XM. Welcome, Brad.
Greetings.
Greetings.
I appreciate you guys on that topic about the bird flu. That's awesome that somebody's actually saying something about that. I just have one concern, is that I know the CDC is handling a lot of the research on it.
Uh-huh.
All that money spent on the stimulus for get up and exercise, instant exercise, couldn't that have been spent on bird flu instead, or health-related issues instead of Michelle Obama videos on how to get up and exercise?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I guess it really depends on where you want your resources allocated. I mean, I would make the argument to you, Brad, that both are important as a physician. I mean, exercise is clearly been studied, and it definitely, if you exercise on a daily basis, you reduce your chances of high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, stroke, stress,
we're
depression.
Too stupid as Americans to figure that out for ourselves anymore. And then
it's not a matter of Americans being,
you know?
It's not a matter of people being stupid. It's just a matter of heightening awareness. I mean, you know, the bottom line is, you know, I would much rather us not spend, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies to big oil companies who are multi-billion dollar companies. I think that's a lot of waste of money. I'd rather see that money going, like you said, maybe more to the CDC and their genetic research on viral mutations.
I'd like to see it for direct cause where we know there's a threat. Example with what he's doing, with this gentleman doing with the CDC's direct cause threat. With the stimulus, that gentleman before was talking about solar energy tied right into the grid. Well,
right.
our power grid is not hardened because President Obama has done nothing to harden our power grid against electromagnetic pulse.
Right, right. Well, look, I don't disagree with you that monies that we have, excuse me, available to us could not be allocated or should be allocated to certain endeavors where you get a bigger bang for your buck, like you're talking about, where you have a direct sort of problem that's presenting itself, and that if you funnel money into that, that's going to give you a more immediate solution. I don't necessarily disagree with you in the principle with respect to that. So,
right. The direct cause of my issue is that it all went back for emotional stuff with the stimulus, like let's spend money on this and that, but let's not fix the electrical grid to harden it from an EMP.
Why is that Obama's fault? What about the other presidents that were before him?
He stopped the committee that was looking into any type of EMP reaction or EMP defense.
So right. It's always Obama's fault. Always.
Wow. No, that's a specific thing. When you know you've got a direct threat and you do nothing to stop it, come on, that says something.
No.
It's not like saying that, you know, so doing nothing is better than doing something on that with an EMP.
All right. Well, listen, Brad, we appreciate the call, so thank you for your perspective. That's Brad calling in from Wichita Falls, Texas.
No other president did anything either. Why is it his fault?
Well, look, I don't want to – it's anything goes. I don't want to go off on a long soliloquy here, Eric. We can make the argument that President Bush, the younger, knew that there was a direct threat with respect to pre-9/11 and that Osama bin Laden was looking to invade the United States and, use planes as weapons of mass destruction. And that was at a security briefing.
Didn't they know that as far back? Back as Clinton's
Condoleezza Rice, but we don't want to get into the finger pointing per se. So let's just keep moving forward here. Let's go next to Nate. He's listening in Lakewood, Colorado, on 760 AM. Nate, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, thanks again for your show, and I too appreciated the bird flu segment. But I called in because, like your father, my father was a union man also, and while you were talking about it, it occurred to me. He spent a lot of time at union meetings, with a poster in front of certain places that they were picketing. I mean, a lot of time, a lot of effort.
Sure.
And it wasn't just for him.
Right.
Here they're paying the dues, and they're not complaining about paying the dues, and they're putting in all this effort, right, to help all of us. And now we've built up this huge helpful stuff that the union has done for us over the years, and we're just starting to let it crumble away. And there needs to be a way for every American to sign into a union if they want to.
No, I agree with you. Look, why is it, and I've often said this on the air, Nate, why is it that we will allow the most powerful and influential people in the world, i.e. sports celebrities, who make tens of millions of dollars a year to form a union amongst themselves, right? They can get unions. You get a professional hockey union, a professional football player union, a professional baseball player union. These are people who make millions upon millions of dollars a year and to play a game. And yet, when it comes to people who are working like in the West Texas fertilizer plant that blew up and 100+ people, perished in that, they don't get rights to organize. When you have people making $38 a month in Bangladesh working in horrible conditions in a factory and that factory collapses and killed over 300 people, pregnant women underneath rubble, underneath concrete and mangled steel, having to deliver babies in that kind of a setting, and they have no right, they have no voices. There's something inherently wrong with the American people when they say, okay, it's great for LeBron James and Kobe Bryant and, Tom Brady to have a union, but yet, mom or dad or Uncle Joe or, Aunt Terry who's out there, being a nurse or, Uncle Larry who's a first responder and a paramedic and on, they don't have a right to representation. I mean, there's something fundamentally wrong when the American public just sort of passively sits by and accepts that as the way that things are. And I agree with you, Nate, that the union system works. You're a byproduct of a union family, a union household, as am I. My father was a union man. And, I'm proud to say that I am an offspring, a child of a union family, because had we not had those protections, had our parents not been able to work, an 8-hour day, get a good living wage, get good health care benefits, be able to, spend time with their children after school and do the homework with them or go to a baseball game or go to a concert or whatever the kids were participating in extracurricular activities. These are things that keep the nuclear family together. And if you are a conservative who believes in a pro-family America, then guess what? There's nothing more pro-family than having a union family being able to stay together as a nuclear family. Right, Nate?
Absolutely. And I think, but there needs to be, I'm self-employed. I'm a handyman in town here, but I can't be in a union per se, but there needs to be like a union organization where the rest of us can just sign up and say yes. And then they can say, hey, we, not only do we have the local 68 or whatever, but we also have all these other people that sign up with them, right?
Right.
So we can take on this lousy 3 million NRA knotheads. And they're not all knotheads. I mean, really.
No, they're not. There's
leadership
like
that's corrupting the NRA.
And that's often the case what happens. All right, listen, Nate, I appreciate the call. I got to get running. That's Nate from Lakewood, Colorado, weighing in with his thoughts, opening up another Freedom Line here. I do have an audio clip that I'm going to share. I can't do it right now, but I'll do it in the next hour. But it's an audio clip that came from Boston, the Boston Marathon bombings. And as we know, there were many heroes that day, many first responders, law enforcement officials, firefighters, paramedics, nurses, doctors, and the citizens themselves. I mean, you saw when those bombs went off, there were people, many people who ran away, obviously in fright and chaos, and they were quite afraid. They were scared for their well-being. But many other people turned into the direction of the bomb and ran to help the wounded, to help tend to the sick, to help tend to the people whose legs were literally hanging by a limb, and amazing stories of heroism. Well, I want to play this audio clip as a short clip in the next hour of the nurses, three specific nurses who treated the victims in the Boston Marathon bombing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Broadcasting from the desert here in Phoenix, Arizona, 1480 KPHX, Dr. Mike Newcomb, sitting in for Tom Hartman on Anything Goes Friday. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. As always, we have our very special guest on the line right now, Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, welcome on board. Oh, hold on. Let's get her here. Hey, Victoria, can you hear us?
I can.
There you go. Well,
welcome. Thank you very much. Thank you. President Obama met with King Abdullah of Jordan in the Oval Office this afternoon and gave remarks to reporters. They both did briefly. And, of course, he addressed the question of whether Syria has used weapons of mass destruction. And he was asked a question about it also. Now, I have the transcript because I get the White House stuff, and I've scoured it. And he's very interesting. Says we have some evidence that chemical weapons have been used on the populations in Syria. These are preliminary assessments. They're based on our intelligence gathering. We have varying degrees of confidence about the actual use, but there are a range of questions about how, when, where these weapons may have been used. He says we're going to be pursuing a very vigorous investigation. And they also say we're investigating this as effectively and as quickly as we can. He said, but I meant what I said, and I will repeat it. It's obviously horrific when mortars are being fired. He said potential use of weapons of mass destruction on civilian populations crosses another line, and that is going to be a game changer. He says we have to act prudently. Later on, he says this is not an on or off switch. He says this is an ongoing challenge we all have to be concerned about. So he says we're going to be working with countries like Jordan to get more direct evidence. And he says a lot of different things about this, but basically he's making it very clear. We are not going to take action tomorrow. That's
right.
The bottom line from this. That is the takeaway. But if we get clear evidence, this is a game changer.
Right. Well, they're definitely on the radar screen.
Oh, yes.
Without question. What else we got happening, Victoria?
President Obama spoke to Planned Parenthood today and criticized new abortion laws and also efforts to cut Planned Parenthood's funding. He singled out lawmakers in Mississippi, North Dakota, and also by implication Washington for proposing and in some cases enacting what he called absurd laws. He said would return the country to the days before Roe versus Wade. He said, when you read about some of these laws, you want to check the calendar. You want to make sure you're still living in 2013. He said we shouldn't have to remind people that when it comes to a woman's health, no politician should get to decide what's best for you. He also talked about when politicians try to turn Planned Parenthood into a punching bag, they're not just talking about you. They're talking about the millions of women who they serve. And he said, when they talk about cutting off your funding, let's be clear, they're talking about telling many of those women that you're on your own. Also, today, the House of Representatives, in what is politically being considered a win for Republicans, passed a bill to partially roll back the sequester, the across-the-board spending cuts, as it relates to the air traffic controllers. This, of course, actually conveniently happening the day that the House and the Senate go on a week's recess so they can all head for the airport. And actually, that's not quite fair because it won't come into effect yet. But you get what I'm, where I'm going with this.
Get where you're going, absolutely.
We all get where I'm going with this. Basically, this was one cut too many. And it was a cut that the Republicans handled very well. They handled it very well because private planes have a constituency, business travelers have a constituency, everybody has a constituency, kids being thrown off Head Starts, seniors being thrown off Meals on Wheels, and the long-term unemployed don't have constituencies to lobby for them. Will other pieces of the sequester also start to get rolled back? That's the next question. We don't know that. But
right.
You can be sure that the Republicans will try to do that next. That's going to be the next step.
No doubt. Hey, Victoria, do we know, because you bring up an interesting point, you're talking about certain things in the sequester that needed a little bit of time to percolate up before it became sort of a crisis situation, obviously with the air traffic controllers being furloughed. But are there any things that we can be looking at in the immediate future that also might be coming to a head now with respect to the sequester?
Well, I mean, I think that we are going to start to see some of the other cuts. I mean, things like with people traveling, just a minor thing, like people going to the national parks. Some
right.
of these national parks aren't going to be open as much. They're not going to have as many staff. People are going to notice things like that. They're not going to be happy.
Right.
I do think people will notice food inspections. It's just going to take a whole bunch of people being poisoned by melons.
Right.
And suddenly you're going to hear about it.
Right. No, absolutely. And that was one of the sequester cuts, the food inspection, the FDA drug. Yeah, absolutely. I hear you. What else we got going, Victoria?
Legislators in the House and Senate this week have introduced bills requiring manufacturers to clearly label foods that have been genetically engineered. And they've got bipartisan support in both chambers, calling for the FDA to develop standards so consumers can plainly tell which foods have been genetically engineered. Barbara Boxer, senator from California, is saying Americans have the right to know what's in the food they eat so they can make the best choices for their families. And this is supported by a broad coalition of consumer groups, businesses, farmers, fishermen, and parents, which is kind of interesting. And in Huffington Post YouGov poll in March, they found that 82% of Americans believe food containing genetically modified ingredients should be labeled accordingly.
Sure, absolutely. Truth and disclosure.
Yeah, exactly. Also today, a report out from the Commerce Department saying that the nation's economy grew at a 2.5% pace during the first 3 months of the year, slightly below estimates as concerns linger about the health of the recovery.
All right. Well, listen, Victoria, thank you for that Talk Radio News Service update, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Okay, back at the top of the hour with more of the Tom Hartman program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to hour number three of the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in here on Anything Goes Friday, and the Freedom Express rumbling along right now. So we're going to keep those lines open at 1-866-987-8466. That's 1-866-987-THOM. Let's go first to Harvey online, listening in Berkeley, California. Harvey, thank you for your patience and waiting.
Thanks. Hi, Dr. Mike, and hello, Eric. Great show today.
Thank you.
I'd like to talk about the virtues of solar energy and renewable energy jobs. Well, first of all, solar energy, once manufactured, They use no water over the 20 to 25-year warranty of the panel, and energy production is second only to agriculture in the daily use of our freshwater resources. So if we want to save our freshwater resources, I say go solar. And solar panels make no noise. There's so much man-made noise pollution out there. Solar panels make no noise, and solar panels create no emissions, no carbon emissions or any other toxic emissions over the lifetime of the panel. They have no moving parts. There's no wearing down of anything except for the electrons moving around. And solar cells are made of silicon, one of the most recyclable of all materials. Sand is silicon. And solar panels don't come with warning sirens like nuclear power plants. And
right.
And when you put solar panels on your house, it actually gives your house a higher resale value, and houses with solar installations sell faster because the house comes with 20 years of utility for both your house and you plug in your car. So that's worth a lot of money there. And
sure.
So if you, there's a website called gofossilfree.org, gofossilfree.org. It's Bill McKibben, and he's talking about divestment from, the fossil world, and I say reinvest in solar and in jobs, reinvest in renewable energy jobs. So that's gofossilfree.org, and
right.
I say let's do it.
And the other good thing about that, Harvey, too, if you do the business plan and you look at solar energy, you have a source that's going to be around for 5 billion years. that's a reliable workforce if you know it's going to be there for 5 billion years. So.
But that's true. So I say, let's get star powered. Let's get solar.
All right, brother. Thank you, Harvey. There you have it.
Bye-bye.
Harvey calling in from Berkeley, California, opening up another Freedom Line here live on the Tom Hartman program. It is Anything Goes Friday. We're riding bareback, Eric, for the rest of the show, the remainder of the show.
Okay, Mike.
It's just me, you, and the listeners right now. That's all it is. Okay, so let's go next. I think we got Betty on the line from Bethlehem, who's also been holding very patiently. So, Betty, welcome to the table.
Thank you. I enjoy your show immensely.
Thank you.
I want to come into that Peterson funding of the hysteria, sequestration, hysteria at another angle from employment and inflation, okay?
Okay.
Now, when my kids grew up, I went to work for the first time, you know, and I got a job with the state employment office, so I'm became somewhat of a little bit of an expert of unemployment. And that was around the 70s and early 80s. And we were wall-to-wall people at when Nixon was in fighting inflation. That's what we were told it was for.
Right.
Wall-to-wall people. Now, moving forward in time, later life, I met the love of my life, who was an economist who sometimes testified for his company in front of the United States Senate. And he informed me that it's a common economic practice to use unemployment to stop inflation. So I'm submitting to you that the unemployment that we have is nothing but a right-wing conspiracy going on for many years, putting the jobs overseas, the low-wage, stagnant wages. There's no reason that the richest country in the world should not have full employment. But so I'm submitting to you that this is nothing. Unemployment is another right-wing conspiracy to hurt or to keep their money from being inflated, and that they don't lose a penny of their stolen billions in inflation. What do you think of that?
No, I think it's an interesting concept, Betty. I mean, let's throw it out to the audience. Let's see what they think, because you got millions of people listening, so we'll hear what they say. Okay.
Well, I'm so grateful for this opportunity to present this, because I do feel so badly. At 83, I feel so badly for the young people and what is happening to this country. And I also feel badly for the people like me who have been so deeply hurt by these terrible rates that we get on our interest. You know, the little bit of money we saved for our old age at 1.5% interest.
Right.
And also the value of my house has fallen about $50,000-$70,000. So it's just a disgraceful situation.
It is.
And,
but you know what? Thank you so much, Betty, for calling at 83 to remain active like that. Thank you so much. Okay, there you have it. I love that, Eric. You got an 83-year-old woman calling, holding on for well over an hour to get her voice heard out there. That's what America's all about. That's the way that we're going to transform this country. One voice, one person at a time. And what better way to do it than via talk radio? 1-866-987-8466 is the number. 1-866-987-THOM. Okay, let's go next to Brian. He's on the line from Denver, Colorado, and he's been holding for quite some time. So let's give Brian some time. He wants to talk about TPP. Hello, Brian. Brian? All right. Well, maybe Brian
wasn't asleep.
Maybe Brian wasn't holding.
He waited so long
that
he
long.
Passed out.
I know. We might have to get some paramedics over there. I mean, hopefully that wasn't a medical condition he was asking me about, Dr. Mike.
TPP.
Right. And then lo and behold, I didn't answer his question, and he now suffered some adverse event because we didn't get to him in time. All right. In any case, let's get back to the Freedom Lines. Next up in the queue will be Rachel. Let's go to Rachel on the line from Landeth, New Hampshire, and listening on Sirius XM Satellite. Rachel, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Dr. Mike.
Hello.
I have a problem that really makes me upset. I'm a 61-year-old woman, veteran of the Navy, and a 30-year veteran of working on naval weapon systems and computers. And I really find it difficult to understand why it is that the Democrats refuse to hold anybody, any of our elected people, accountable for this that they've done. We have the entire Bush family, this crime syndicate, as Tom said, that we know lied to get us into Iraq and killed people, then died in 9/11.
Right.
And, you know, we have Mitch McConnell, who came right out and said when Obama was first elected that their main goal was to make sure that he didn't get reelected and they were going to stop everything he did. Why aren't the Democrats holding these people accountable for the things that they say or do?
Well, you know what? You bring up some real interesting points, and I'll tell you, one of the things that we have spoken about here on this particular program and the way that you can hold them accountable, because we the people have spoken, right? We have spoken, Rachel, and the Democrats, for instance, have a majority in the Senate, right? And any time that you start a new legislative session, you have the right, as the majority in the Senate, to sort of put rules into place that will be conducive to the work of the people. Well, Harry Reid, our Senate Majority Leader, had the opportunity, and we know that the Republicans for the last multiple years have been using the filibuster to stymie the work of the people. He had an opportunity at the beginning of this session to say, "Look, guess what? We're going to reform this. We're going to say that you just need a majority to call something to a vote, and then we'll vote. And in that way, more of the people's work would get done." I think the Democrats, to a certain extent, with respect to that, have handcuffed themselves, Rachel. They've basically paralyzed themselves to the point now where even when we want to get things done, like you're saying, and let's move forward, we can't because we were not bold enough and courageous enough to actually go out there and change the rules when we could have done it. So listen, Rachel, I got to run. I appreciate the call. Thank you for your work and thank you for your service to this country. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that's Rachel calling from Landeth, New Hampshire, opening up another Freedom Line. We'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman program. It's Anything Goes Friday.
This is the Tom Hartman program.
Broadcasting from the Valley, Phoenix, Arizona, 1480 KPHX. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Okay, welcome back. It is Anything Goes Friday. It's Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman right now. We're going to get to the Freedom Lines in a second, but I do want to play this clip here, Eric. This is a clip that I compiled from earlier in the week. I haven't had a chance to play it, but given the fact that we have spoken today about Workers' Memorial Day, which is actually Sunday, as the AFL-CIO recognizes that particular day each year as Workers' Memorial Day, I want to play this clip. Now, we talked about the Boston Marathon bombings. We talked about the heroes, the heroines that were there that day. We talked about the first responders in particular, law enforcement, policemen, firefighters, paramedics, nurses, doctors, and also not the least of which are the citizens themselves who responded in very heroic fashion. So what I wanted to do was just play this because, you know, as we're talking about Workers Memorial, these are workers. These are the people who affect your lives every single day, whether it's the policeman or woman out there just protecting your local community, whether it's the firefighters providing fire safety, whether it's the paramedics responding to medical emergencies at all crazy hours of the day and night, whether it's the doctors and nurses, you name it. These are people who work each and every day. They get up in the morning, they put their shoes on, they tie their shoes, they get out there, roll up their sleeves, and do the job that they're asked to do. And in many cases, many of these workers are unionized workers, okay? They participate in unions, and the unions, as far as I'm concerned, protect not only the workers' interests, but they also protect the company's interests, and they protect any of the clients that are affiliated with those particular companies. So I just thought it was important for you to hear from three of these nurses. These are three particular nurses who were interviewed on videotape, and they gave their candid thoughts on that particular day, where they were, what happened, how they got called, and ultimately how they responded to duty. So let's go to the tape.
My first thought is, you know, young woman, prime of her life, traumatic amputation, cardiac arrest, will she survive? And then you add on top of that, why? This was totally unnecessary. Shrapnel, nails. We had full instructions that anything that we found, we were to save. In the care of the first patient that arrived, as I was attempting to clean up some wounds, law enforcement was actually here on scene looking for blast patterns. And, you know, God bless them. They're here to do their job. They're focused on their job. We're focused on our job. It was kind of hard to have somebody say, don't wash that wound, you might wash evidence away. And I had to remind myself that these folks are doing their part to do the best they can for this person and for all of us.
Typically, a patient will go through a CAT scanner, through different imaging, and they will know what sort of injuries they're facing, whether or not they need to go to the OR, but these patients sort of skipped that whole first and second triage part, went straight to the OR. And so, you know, we were literally just told patient, you know, male or female, and amputation.
I went home, got my uniform and my badge, and I drove in. And I come along, you know, Sterile Drive, and I was driving up Cambridge Street, and I saw the marathoners who were just finishing up and had their medals around their necks. And some of them were just dazed, and other ones were rushing to the hospital to donate blood. And I was really taken back by that. But I had to put that in the back of my mind and just think about what I was coming in to do. I was coming in to help the poor victims that were hurt. And I had to, you know, keep my mind in the game.
All right. I get all choked up, man, when I listen to that, because that's, you know, that's our nurses. I mean, and I'll tell you, I give great, great, great kudos and praise to the nurses of this country, because oftentimes you don't hear a lot about the nurses. You hear about the doctor and the doctor this and the doctor that and how great the doctor is. And look, I'm not by any means undermining or belittling my fellow colleagues, but let me tell you something. If you want to put somebody on a pedestal, you know, put the nurse on the pedestal, not the doctor, because the nurse is the one who's out there on the floors in those hospitals with the people day in, day out, second after second, minute after minute, hour after hour. And guess what? When that patient crashes, and oftentimes there aren't doctors around. Oftentimes it's the nurse who is the first responder in the hospital floor, whether it's the ICU or whether it's a general medical floor. And then you're just standing there, and that patient stops breathing, and that patient's eyes roll up in their head, and their face turns blue, and all of a sudden you are it. You are, I'm getting chills just thinking about this. My hair is standing up on my hand here, on my arm. But the nurse is the one there to initiate that first response, to initiate CPR and resuscitative measures. The nurse is there oftentimes when the patient is spending their final days, their final moments on this earth, and holding their hands and, you know, caressing their hair and just, you know, being there to listen to them, that human touch. I mean, there's so many things that nurses do that oftentimes they don't get sort of the glory and the praise that they do. So I just wanted to take an opportunity here today to say thank you to all of the nurses out there in the communities, at the state level, at the district level, at the local city level, the county level, the municipalities. I mean, you guys and gals, you are tremendous warriors, you're tremendous heroes. And, you know, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you so much for what you do and what you did in those Boston Marathon bombing cases, and just, you know, getting out there, getting back out to the hospital, even though it might have been your day off and you didn't have to work, but you responded. You responded to the call of duty, and that's something you do each and every day. So as part of the Workers' Memorial celebration, if you will, it's not really a celebration in a sense, because it's a somber day, because each year about 4,500 plus of our fellow American citizens die on the job as a result of workplace related injuries. And again, to put that into perspective for you, that is 1.5 9/11s, because we had about 3,000 people on 9/11 perish in those terrorist attacks. We have 1.5 9/11s every single year, year after year after year, as a result of workplace deaths. And these are things, as Dr. Anthony Arnov talked to us about in the first hour, the sad thing is that not only is it a tragedy, but it is a preventable tragedy. These are deaths that could have been prevented had only the right processes been put in place, had the right mindset been in place, where we do not put profits before the lives of our fellow human beings. Back in a moment.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
1480 KPHX. This is Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Okay, welcome back to the program. Let's get right to the Freedom Lines. We got Walter on the line from York, Pennsylvania, listening on Free Speech TV. Walter, welcome to the program.
How are you today? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Hey, pharmaceutical commercials. Now, I was watching a Ralph Nader show, and he mentioned about he could show Warren Buffett, who chose to say he'd like to pay at least equal taxes with his as his secretary. So Ralph Nader says, well, I can show Warren Buffett how to spend one quarter of $1 billion in 3 years to revamp the tax system. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, that's interesting. Now I have an idea how much it would cost to do something on this federal level, okay? And then I'm thinking pharmaceutical commercials. You see about 70 an hour throughout all the three major networks. There's got to be a lot of money invested in that. So why couldn't the pharmaceutical companies who are pushing these drugs to the people,
uh-huh.
I mean, that should be a patient-doctor relationship, number one.
I agree. I think it's ridiculous as a physician, Walter, the kind of advertisements I see on TV when, in particular, 45 seconds out of the 60-second commercials telling you about all the things about the drug that can kill you or make your life miserable, and then there's only 15 seconds left that tells you, oh, okay, this can help you. But I agree. I think it sort of interferes with the doctor-patient relationship.
Exactly. So if maybe Congress would look at that, I mean, there's federal regulations on these commercials anyway.
No doubt about it. Well, listen, I think those are good, interesting comments, and thank you, Walter. I'm just going to go to Eric here. Eric, we talked about playing a commercial because it's amazing. When I'm at home and I'm sitting down and just kind of watching TV and, you know, whatever, watching the Rachel Maddow show or, you know, something along
any
those lines, any show, it doesn't really matter, and all of a sudden one of these drug commercials comes on, my ears perk up, not because I'm really interested in the advertisement itself as far as what the drug is or what it can do, but because of all the horrible things that you hear in these drugs, it shocks me that anyone would even want to utilize any of them, given all the disclaimers that you hear. So I think you kind of randomly looked for one. I mean, which drug did you look up?
Cymbalta.
So is it what's like a minute kind of commercial?
Yeah,
kind of thing?
It says a minute 31, but there's a count in at the beginning. I skipped past that, and we're just going to go to the
commercial. Let's just listen to this as a community here, and just you guys tell me. I mean, if you're listening to this drug, is this something you'd want to use?
When you're depressed, where do you want to go?
Nice music.
Nowhere. Who do you feel like seeing? No one.
Depression hurts in so many ways. Sadness, loss of interest, anxiety. Cymbalta can help. Cymbalta is a prescription medication that treats many symptoms of depression. Tell your doctor right away if your depression worsens, you have unusual changes in behavior, or thoughts of suicide. Antidepressants can increase these in children, teens, and young adults. Cymbalta is not approved for children under 18. People taking MAOIs or thyridazine or with uncontrolled glaucoma should not take Cymbalta. Taking it with NSAID pain relievers, aspirin, or blood thinners may increase bleeding risk. Severe liver problems, some fatal, were reported. Signs include abdominal pain and yellowing of the skin or eyes. Talk with your doctor about your medicines, including those for migraine, or if you have high fever, confusion, and stiff muscles, to address a possible life-threatening condition. Tell your doctor about alcohol use, liver disease, and before you reduce or stop taking Cymbalta. Dizziness or fainting may occur upon standing. Side effects include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Ask your doctor about Cymbalta. Depression hurts. Cymbalta can help.
Unbelievable. It's almost hard not to laugh, Eric. I mean, because,
I know, and I don't want people that have depression to think we're making fun of them.
No, because look, they have a role, but did you listen to that advertisement?
Yeah, it's horrible side effect.
It starts off talking about, you know, the slow music, you know, and, you know.
Where do you want to go?
Nowhere. And, you know, so they got the mood set, the depressed mood, you know, you kind of buying in, you got the hook there. And then it goes on to be like, you know, when you're depressed, you can get suicidal. And then the next thing they tell you is, oh, by the way, this drug
will make you suicidal.
Will make you even more suicidal. If you're a teen, if you're an adult, if you're an elderly person, you could even become more suicidal taking this medication. As though you don't got enough problems on your mind right now, that you're depressed and you feel like you want to off yourself. Now you got to what was that? Seconds into it, you know.
Yeah, the majority of the commercial, as I looked at the timeline, was side effects.
Right. So then they went from that, and I couldn't even write down fast enough all the bad things that this thing could potentially do to you. But then if you take aspirin, NSAIDs, you could have bleeding. In certain cases, people have died from this. They even said that. And the thing, people have died, and you could turn yellow, and, you know, you can get confused. You can get stiff muscles. You can get dizziness, nausea, vomiting, dry mouth, constipation. I mean, really? Really? Are you kidding me? This is an advertisement for something that you think is going to make you feel better? And this is not just this particular drug, Eric. These are drugs. Any drug that you have, it's not just antidepressants. Any of the drugs that they advertise today almost has about three-fourths of the commercial talking about either the fatal complications of the drug or some serious, serious adverse effects that you can experience.
By the way, we have a count on that. 40 seconds of the 60 was the disclaimer.
Just disclaimers.
Yeah.
About all the crazy things that it could do to you.
So 20 seconds of it was, you know, the real
nice
the meat of it.
Well, it was just music with saying, are you depressed? And basically, ask your doctor now if you can use Cymbalta, because these are the things that could happen if you use it. It just, I don't get it.
And that's not the only drug. I mean, we're not hammering down Cymbalta.
No,
but there's many
I'm just
drugs
saying
like
the point that they have to make all these disclosures, and the fact of the matter is these are not just innocuous pills.
But
they just kind of pop
glad?
In. They're not happy pills is what I'm saying.
Aren't you glad they do say all that stuff so you know?
Well, I think so, but I think it's just funny that they well, not funny, but it's just bizarre. It's bizarre. You have that music. It's soft. It's like trying to invite you. We understand your problem.
It's very depressing music.
We could reach out to you.
They're trying to make you even more depressed while you listen to it. So you go run out and buy some Cymbalta.
That's capitalism for you. If that commercial to me represents modern day capitalism in a nutshell. I mean, there's no question. Our modern day form of capitalism is just totally reflected in that commercial, okay? All right, listen, any case, I digress. Let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now. It is the Tom Hartman program here. It's Anything Goes Friday. Let's go next, I believe, to Jimmy. He's listening in Arkadelphia, Arkansas, on Free Speech TV. Jimmy, welcome to the table.
Hey, thank you so much, Dr. Mike. I'm glad to be on the program.
Thank you, sir.
The comment I have today is about the Medicaid program.
Yes, sir.
And, yeah, I've had it for over 20 years because I had a bad car accident when I was young. And there's good things about Medicaid, but bad too. But Mike Huckabee didn't make it any better for us adults on Medicaid, I'll tell you that. Whether it only pays for prescription drugs that are generic, absolutely no name brand drugs are paid with Medicaid. And less than half of the generic drugs are paid for. It's crazy. But what I wanted to tell you was I'm so proud of the state for approving the expansion. We did approve the Medicaid expansion. That's going to be here, I guess, January 1st. And also what I wanted to say was with that many more people with Medicaid,
right,
there's kind of a stigma with it. I think a lot of that will be removed, and I think the people will demand, with that many more, they'll demand that it gets better. What do you think, Mike?
No, well, look, first and foremost, Jimmy, it's a astute observation, because there is, you know, sort of an unstated stigma, and I don't look at it that way, but I understand what you're saying, because when you're on Medicaid, obviously it is a program predominantly for people who are at the lower rungs, if you will, of the socioeconomic ladder, and they need that financial assistance. They don't have the money and the financial resources to purchase a private health insurance plan. So I think Medicaid, from my perspective, one, as a physician, but two, even more importantly, as a human being, I think it's the right, compassionate thing to do. So when I see somebody who is on Medicaid, to be honest with you, I might even have maybe a little bit more compassion, if you will, just because I commiserate with the plight that they're in, and I want to do whatever I can to make them feel better and to heal them, and not to feel stigmatized, but to feel that, hey, guess what? You are a fellow brother, you're a fellow sister, you're a fellow human being, and whatever I can do to help you, you know, I'm going to try to help you. And if we really want to say, Jimmy, that we are a Christian nation, right? If we really want to say that we believe in Jesus Christ and his principles, then guess what? Isn't that what Jesus did, Jimmy? Didn't Jesus go to the least of thee? Didn't Jesus go to the sick? Didn't he go to the blind man and cured his sight? Didn't Jesus go to the person with leprosy and cure the leprosy? I mean, Jesus went to, if you will, the Medicaid patients of the day, because those were people who didn't have access to doctors. They didn't have access to health insurance. They didn't have access, you know, to great revenue and resources. And so I agree with you that Medicaid should never be looked at, Jimmy, as a stigma. But on the contrary, it should just be looked at as a way to help our fellow brothers and sisters. So I appreciate what you have to say there, Jimmy. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, I got to sneeze. Sorry about that.
I killed you, Mike.
Did I just sneeze on national radio or no?
You did the first time. I got the second
one.
You
got the second sneeze.
You have a little button right there, Mike. It says cough.
I know, but, you know, what's the big deal? I mean, people sneeze all over the world, Eric.
That's
all
true,
the time.
But nobody wants to hear you sneeze on the air.
But why not? It's
you're
audio.
You're so human, Mike.
It shows my vulnerability. It shows just how.
That's not the H bird flu, is it?
No, it's not the H bird flu. It's not called the H bird flu either.
H-N, whatever.
Obviously, you are not listening to Dr.
Yes,
Fauci. Okay. But in any case, listen, it is Anything Goes Friday. We still got the Freedom Lines pack, the Freedom Express pulling up to its final stop, its final destination for today. You're listening to the Tom Hartman program, and we'll be back with your calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And it is the H7N9 virus, Eric, for your information. Okay, welcome back to the final segment for today, my friends. Dr. Mike Newcomb finishing out the week here for Tom Hartman. And the Freedom Lines are open as we speak, so let's get right to them and get in as many calls as possible. Let's go first to Paul on the line from Brighton, Michigan, and he wants to weigh in with some of his thoughts. Paul, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you doing, Dr. Mike?
I'm doing well, doing well.
I heard a little bit of a Democrat bashing today, and I'm a recovering Republican myself. I just want to point out a few facts. It's not the Democrats' fault that Bush is a war criminal and that the Republicans bankrupted the country with their tax cuts for rich people and, you know, caused a financial crisis and a depression. And it's also not the Democrats' fault that the stimulus wasn't perfect, but because they had to get two Republican votes, which is all they got on it. But it did get us out of the depression where we were losing 800,000 jobs a month, you know. And it's also not the Democrats' fault that we didn't get background checks. In the Senate, the Republicans blocked that. 90% of the Republicans voted against it. They filibustered it, and they blocked it.
Right.
You know, and we're not going to make any progress on any of these issues until the American people wake up and stop voting for the Republicans.
Yeah. No, look, hey, I'm with you on that. Don't get me wrong. The only thing I took issue with the Democrats was the filibuster, because I think that we could have done something. I mean, we've clearly seen Paul, that the Republicans are willing to obstruct at any cost. They will absolutely try to make this president, and as a consequence, our country fail. So I think that Harry Reid, given the fact that we've seen, you know, the usurpation of the filibuster, he could have changed the rules, and he should have changed the rules, you know, for that. But that being said, I agree with you. I mean, you know, I think that the conservative Republicans are destroying this country as we know it. And you brought up some excellent examples of the financial debacle, the crisis that you could make the argument it was pretty much the work of conservative Republicans. You look at the wars, these illegal wars that we've had. Absolutely. Yeah. The stimulus was the Democrats' idea, like you said. And, you know, I agree. It averted what could have been even a worse financial disaster. The background checks, the Democrats were fully behind it. But again, Republican obstructionism, you know, defeated today. So you're right, Paul. I agree. And I think more and more people are agreeing with you. I think that's why the president won re-election. That's why the Democrats are the majority in the Senate. And quite frankly, if you didn't have all of this redistricting and gerrymandering being done by the Republican Party over the last several decades, I mean, you realize, Paul, that the Democrats won more votes in the House of Representatives nationwide than the Republicans did.
Yeah, that's right. By over a million, I believe it is.
Yeah, and we ended up becoming the minority in the House. How does that happen?
Yeah. Well, so, one quick thing about Harry Reid, though, is this hasn't been reported a lot, but he actually didn't have enough votes to get the filibuster changed.
Right. Well, then that's the, you know, shame on the Democrats for that then, because he should have had enough for that. Paul, I appreciate it. Good points. Insightful. Thank you very much. All right. That's Paul calling from Brighton, Michigan there. Good call. All right. Let's open it up to next in the line. Let's see here. We'll go to, I'm trying to see here, Eric, who's been holding the longest here. Let's go to Don. I think he's been holding the longest in Salem, Oregon. Don, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. Thanks for having me on, Dr. Mike.
Sure.
First of all, I want to thank the Tom Hartman program. We just switched to satellite TV about 4 months ago.
Okay.
And he's not able to get free speech TV. And I've been recording Tom Hartman and sending it to him, and actually managed to convert a lot of his friends and neighbors from the Tea Party to the Occupy movement.
Okay.
Which I think is priceless. But my question was, are there any companies developing wind energy turbines for residential use in rural areas?
In rural areas? I don't know of any companies per se. Eric, when we drive from here to California, we see those big...
Yeah, Palm Springs.
In Palm Springs, right? And they have all these wind farms out
there.
Yeah,
it's gotten bigger and bigger over the years. It's massive.
Right, and that provides to the local community, though, correct, from my understanding?
Yeah, absolutely. All that goes into that area there.
Yeah, so there are, at least in this neck of the woods, I know there's some stuff like that going. Look, you heard the caller call earlier, you know, not only about wind but solar. I think these are the ways to go in the future, Don. I mean, think about it. I mean, you can go every parking lot that has covered parking, for instance, you could basically put solar panels on top of the covered parking and then have little places where you have electrical charging areas, so you can get the power from the sun into the solar panel, provide the electricity right there in the parking space, and then have the ability to recharge there. And you could do that all over the country.
By the way, the gentleman on the phone, there are home-use wind turbines you can buy. Some of them are quite expensive, around $8,000, and some of them are about $500.
But it depends on how much electricity it generates and how much you save.
The one that's $7,000 generates 4,500 watts.
Right, so you just have to do the calculations and see what that converts into electricity, and then how
and you have to live in a windy place.
Right, and how fast would it take to recoup your actual investment? All right, well, listen, we appreciate it, Don. We're going to try to get a few other callers. Thanks a lot for calling into the program.
Okay,
thanks, thank you. All right, you got it. Okay, let's go to Scott on the line from Sirius Satellite Radio. He's listening, and he is in McKinney, Texas. So, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, you're doing a fabulous job there.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, when you're acknowledging the sacrifice the first responders make, I think there's a group you left out.
Yes, sir.
And I would say teachers, educators, because they are some of the valuable people, because they basically create the next future, and they determine really what kind of society you're going to have.
I'm with you. Look,
I know teachers that take out their own pocket. They're underpaid. If you pay more, actually reach your own pocket for supplies.
Now, look, teachers are the way to the future. I have to tell you, I mean, you know, throughout my career and my education, all the way from Jesuit high school through college and medical school, if I didn't have those teachers, I wouldn't be the man or the person I am today, Scott. So I'm with you on that one. So kudos to the teachers
exactly.
as well.
It's insanity. The conservatives in Texas, they want to cut public education. It should be human rights.
Nope, I agree with you. Listen, I got to run. We're up at the end of the program here, but I also want to take a quick moment, as always, Eric, for on behalf of you and I, to thank Jim Javinski, to thank Shane, to thank Sean, and also to thank Tom as well.
Yes.
So we always enjoy this opportunity to get behind this mic. It's a great responsibility. We take it seriously, but we truly do enjoy it. And last but not least, I do want to thank the workers, not only of America, but worldwide. Our thoughts, our hearts, our prayers are with you. We haven't forgot about you, and we will be there for you in the future. Workers will ultimately get the rights and the wages that they deserve.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.